Brian, I'll just go down there. I'll be back.
I call this meeting of the House Committee on Veterans Services and Emergency Preparedness for Tuesday, February 24th, to order. And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2539. I'm Representative Witt. I believe you're going to. And Representative Evans, are you going to? Thank you, Representative Witt, for being here. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm State Representative Brad Witt from House District 31, and I'm here this afternoon to speak on behalf of House Bill 2539. This past September, when this committee was holding interim hearings, and I was a member of this committee at that time, we heard testimony from a Cindy Warburton, who is a family medical practitioner, and she indicated the potential for a vast underutilization of medical benefits by women veterans. And I found her testimony exceedingly disturbing on a number of levels, not the least of which, of course, is the cost of medical benefits to begin with, exceptionally high. And it seems nearly inconceivable to me that anyone who would have free or low-cost medical benefits would, in essence, forsake those benefits. And I mean, to put it into perspective, how many of us as legislators would ever give up our medical benefits that we earn serving in this building? And worse yet, what would we do as a legislature or as individual legislators if it were our sister legislators who are precisely the ones that were giving up those benefits? I think it would be a call to action. Secondly, ours is a voluntary military service in this country. Presumably, no one is being forced to go into the military. Recruits come into the service for a variety of reasons. Love of country, commitment to service, the potential for personal growth and development, maybe job opportunities, and on and on and on. A host of reasons, but these are highly motivational reasons that that people enter military service. And they do so and make a commitment for a number of years. So the point that I'm trying to make here is the recruit comes in. We have a motivated and active person who's entering military service, presumably for a host of good reasons. And yet, on the back end, when this person comes out, and typically when this woman comes out, they have now, in essence, given up their medical benefits. And the question is why? Lastly, there's the elephant in the room. The bill asks for a study, and I don't want to prejudice the study in any way, but Mr. Chairman, committee members, it needs to be addressed. I can't help but wonder to what extent a largely male culture in the military, number one, and number two, an exceedingly high level of MST, military sexual trauma, that is experienced by women while in the military, And I think you're going to be hearing more on the extent to which that is a problem here in a little bit. The extent to which those have adverse impacts on the individual's woman's decision of whether or not to take advantage of her medical benefits. But whatever the causes, House Bill 2539 attempts to find the answers and to provide some recommendations to overcome the problems that are operating here. The bill with the proposed amendment requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to enter into a statewide contract to determine access, delivery, utilization, and barriers to medical services by women veterans. The department will then report those findings back with recommendations to the legislature by November 1st, 2016. Committee members and Mr. Chairman, there is no one that should go into military service and for whatever reason be giving up their medical benefits. I think I pointed out several reasons here today that would give us pause to ask why. We need to find the answers to why. We need to act on that. And we not only need to make sure that our veterans have access to both health and mental benefits, but we also need to make sure that as a state, we are not leaving on the table money that is intended to benefit the veterans who've given so much to our state and our country. And with that, thank you very much. And I would be happy following my colleague's testimony to answer whatever questions I might be able to.
Thank you very much.
Chair Lively, members of the House Veterans Emergency Preparedness Committee, and Representative Witt. Thank you for considering House Bill 2539. In simplest terms, this is a bill, it's a little bill with a big heart. It provides an action plan for developing an up-to-date assessment of medical care services for our women veterans. The last such assessment was done in 2010, and we've been at war since then, and a lot of things have changed. But as we look at the bill, there are some things I ask us to consider. First, 14% of the 1.5 million members of today's United States Armed Forces are women. Over 280,000 women have already served or are currently serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And over 400,000 have served in the armed forces since the terrorist attacks of 9/11. In fact, since the American Revolution, over 2.5 million women have served in uniform in times of peace and war. Here, closer to home, consider the following. 28,000 women veterans are currently in Oregon, probably more than that, but those are the ones we know about. And the vast majority of those 28,000 women have served in Iraq, Afghanistan, or both. As a veteran of both, Iraq and Afghanistan, and some distant places we've long forgotten, I am here on behalf of my sisters in arms. We have failed to adjust our service delivery structures and systems fast enough. We are failing our women veterans, and we must not rest until we keep faith with all of our veterans. In fact, we must not rest until we keep faith with all of them. There are a lot of areas that demand our attention. We're going to be talking about some of those over different bills, over different days. But none of them are as important as health care delivery, access, availability, and quality of care. We must transform a service delivery model established to care for men in centuries past for the 21st century realities of a mixed force and a global war. I ask you to take this action on behalf of the young women I serve with. For too long, our female veterans have suffered from benign and sometimes not so benign neglect. The progress made, and there has been some, has unfortunately been too little, too slow, and too often subject to the roller coaster of public interest and opinion. I served with women throughout my two decades in uniform. These women served our nation, our state, our communities with both heart and honor. Glenda Jenkins, Naomi Mathis, Michelle Nelson, Lisa Undum, Tori Habis, Corey Nobel, and the hundreds of other women service members that I spent time with in far-off distant deserts and guerrilla-filled jungles aren't asking for anything special. They wouldn't ask, quite frankly, they wouldn't ask for anything. But it is up to us, to the men and women that live in peace, a peace that's paid at their expense, that must demand and we must deliver the support necessary for meaningful reintegration services and care for those that have earned it. As many of you know, I led Governor Kunkoski's Task Force on Veteran Services. It was a year-long process that yielded an invaluable understanding of veteran services and the communities associated with delivering those services. In 2009, this body passed an historic package of legislation that sought to supplement federal programs and modernize our state delivery structures and systems. And we made some progress. And then we hit a great recession. Today, supposedly in the shadow of that great recession, we must pick up the work and begin the task anew. We have thousands of veterans returning to Oregon every year. Many of these veterans happen to be women. These veterans have earned our attention. This bill is a critical piece of developing a larger strategy for reintegrating this generation of warriors. House Bill 2539, I believe, is an important step in keeping faith with those that have served us so well. If you have any questions, I'll try to answer them. And if not, I'll just try to sit here and look smart.
Any questions for Representative Evans or Representative Witt?
Thank
then
you
we're going to be calling Dr. Warburton.
Yes.
To provide that. Okay. And thank you very much again for bringing the bill to us.
Yes.
Both of you. So we'll get her on the phone and see what she can share with us.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chairman,
you very
members
much.
Of the committee.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Cindy. This is Brian from Committee Services again. We've got you on here for the committee, and we're going to have your slide up in a second. If you could just go ahead and state your name for the record, and you may begin.
I'll put your microphone.
Hello, this is Cindy Warburton.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Representative Witt and members of the committee, for inviting me to call in today, and more importantly, for sponsoring this House Bill 2539 that serves as a first step to improve the health care of women veterans in Oregon by identifying how they use health care services across the state. I'd like to briefly share with you some information about the research involving women veterans in Central Oregon that I had conducted last year and how it relates to this bill. And I'll start with just a little background about myself. While I am not a veteran, I have many veterans in my life that are near and dear to my heart. My husband is a Marine veteran. I have many friends and other family members who have served, in particular my daughter. And that is her pictured up on the slide in the room. And she, like her father, joined the Marines to serve our country. And now, after almost nearly 5 years of service and a deployment to Afghanistan behind her, she will be completing her service and returning here to beautiful Central Oregon, where I'm calling from today, in Bend. And she'll be coming home to a community that loves their veterans, but without a veteran-centric health care or specialty services that are offered in larger cities such as Portland. And so she's going to need to adjust and navigate in this civilian world of things as she adapts to a new routine. And when healthcare needs arise, she's not going to have that luxury to drive across town to the women's center at the VA. And at the VA, where the healthcare providers know their veterans, they're familiar with their particular health risks and needs. Instead, she's going to stay right here, likely, in her community and go to a local clinic where it's convenient. And she'll get the needed healthcare, but she will sadly probably never even be asked if she served in the military. And women veterans are often overlooked and underserved. Despite this, the VA has made tremendous efforts to improve care and access for this growing population of veterans. And despite all of this, many women still choose to use health care outside of the VA, either for their own convenience or for personal preference. And as you all are well aware, the past 13 years in Iraq and Afghanistan has been this generation's Vietnam War. Fortunately, today we have far more welcoming communities and services, but the toll of prolonged military activity, combat exposure, multiple deployments has undoubtedly affected the 2.5 million veterans involved in those wars. There are currently 1.8 million women veterans in the U.S. That's about 11% of the total veteran population. And for the first time in our military's history, the fastest growing population of veterans is women. And many of these women have been in direct combat support roles. And the number of active duty women who will be transitioning to veteran status over the next 5 to 10 years will just continue to grow. And this is a young population in prime childbearing age. Currently, the average age of a female veteran is 43. That's 20 years younger than the average age of a male veteran. And as I mentioned, the average age is going to continue to become lower as more women move from active to veteran status. 1 in 4 of these women will have been in a combat support role. And sadly, 1 in 5 will screen positive when they're asked if they've ever experienced military sexual trauma. In Oregon, we have just over 25,000 women who are veterans, and in Central Oregon, in Deschutes, Jefferson, and Crook County, there's almost 1,400. And of those, less than 350 women use the local Ben-VA outpatient clinic. That's less than 25% of the women veterans in my community that are using VA services. When they leave the military and they return to their hometown, many are not going to the VA for their health care. They're going to their community provider in the towns and the communities where they live. And these providers may not be well-trained or well-versed in the care of veterans. So apart from my daughter being a Marine, this topic is also very near and dear to my heart because I am one of those community providers, seeing patients in a small community clinic in Central Oregon. I'm a family nurse practitioner, and last year is one of my projects for the doctoral program at OHSU. I conducted some research on the health care for women veterans living in the Central Oregon area, and I looked at how they were using health care services and what kind of experience they had with community providers. So this initial small assessment indicated that women veterans are generally not accessing the benefits or the resources available to them through the VA. And this is despite all the positive changes and the work that the VA has been putting into improving access and services for women. Work that includes clinics designed just for women, specialty women's services, and an increase in the national attention on women veteran issues. So in addition to looking at the perspective from women veterans during my research, I also interviewed community providers from their perspective on caring for veterans in their clinics. And I asked for the women veterans, I asked them where they would go for their health care and whether or not they use VA services. And many reported seeing a community provider, and they were either not aware of their VA benefits or they were aware and they chose not to use them based on a variety of reasons, including location and travel time for VA-specific services. Some felt uncomfortable with the typical VA clinical experience. And then there was a general misunderstanding of how services worked. For example, a few veterans didn't sign up for benefits because they thought that this should be reserved for those that needed the care the most, even though that they might be eligible for the benefits themselves. And other research has supported the fact that women veterans are less likely to talk about the fact that they are veterans. And this was true in my research as well. They're not necessarily bringing up their experience to the providers. Basically, if they're not asked, they don't tell. They tend to think that if it was important or relevant, then they would be asked questions about possible previous military experience. And additionally, some reported that they didn't necessarily feel comfortable talking about their experience because they didn't think or feel like they would be well understood. And neither side was really talking to each other. When I interviewed community providers, it was quite evident that asking about military experience specifically to women was not something that they ever did in their practice. So then when and if someone brought up their military experience, it was not something that was added to their medical records in a way that then would help provide continuity of care or help them connect the veteran to VA-specific resources. And women reported various perceptions about using VA services. For example, if they used the VA, it was more likely just for specialty or service-connected issues and not for primary care. And some reported feeling uncomfortable going to the clinic where they were grouped with, quote, a room full of grumpy old men. And they generally liked the care that they received from the VA, but it, again, that was for a specialty care and not their primary care. And I also asked questions that just tried to get a sense of military culture and awareness among community healthcare providers. And while the providers certainly expressed gratitude and respect for people who had served in the military, there was a general lack of knowledge about specific health-related topics that, that should really be considered when caring for a veteran. And as we know, veterans who have been exposed to combat-related stress, military sexual trauma, and physical or emotional stress that results in PTSD, they will have much better outcomes if their healthcare provider is aware of and implements those evidence-based treatment plans. And the VA system provides expert care to our veterans. And what is not translated into those, into the community setting where community providers are the primary healthcare provider for that veteran. And so through my research, I came up with three recommendations for improving the health of women veterans from a, and this is from a community provider standpoint. So the first recommendation was to raise awareness. And in my community here, I'm doing this by giving presentations to outpatient clinics and really just about to any organization that will listen to my message. And the goal here is to inform primary care providers about veteran health issues and to improve the military culture and awareness. I've also have partnered with some of the wonderful women veterans in my community that helped me to organize a women veterans gathering. We did this a few months ago and now plan on quarterly meetings. And then next month, we're getting together with a group of veterans and planning our first meeting to look at a nonprofit group whose mission and focus would be to just support and bring together women veterans in our community. The second recommendation is to use standard screening tools for women. And again, this relates back to primary care and the community provider. So as I mentioned, there 1 in 5 women will report military sexual trauma when screened. And when they screen positive for this sexual trauma, they're really at higher risk for certain health problems, including PTSD, depression, anxiety disorders, substance abuse, and obesity. So by implementing the standard screening questions, and there are 2 of them that the VA uses, community providers will be able to identify appropriate veterans in need of that of military sexual treatment that's specific for that, and also to connect them with the resources within the VA. And then the third recommendation was for primary care providers and community clinics to increase their knowledge of health risk and for veterans and for specifically women veterans. And the VA has vast amounts of research and evidence-based treatment recommendations, and the challenge really is to get the information to translate out of the VA system into civilian health care. There are free online training modules that deal with PTSD, but that's really just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to knowing how to provide that expert care for veterans. So what I'm encouraging there is some stronger communication and collaboration between VA services and community partners. So moving forward, House Bill 2539 is a first step for improving the health care of women veterans living in the state of Oregon. My research was completed on a very small segment in a limited geographical location. So by including the entire population of women veterans, the VA will be able to have a broader picture of just how, what, where, and why women veterans in our state choose their health care services. And like any organizational improvement plan, the VA has to start with collecting data on the current state of how women veterans are using their services, and then analyzing that data and prioritizing the findings will be the next step needed to close that gap between services that currently exist and then future services that will meet the needs. And recommendations should focus on meaningful changes that result in better access and improved health outcomes for women veterans living in the whole state of Oregon. And these recommendations should also include a civilian or a community perspective, given that so many women are not using VA services. And this process and the findings should be really transparent to ensure accountability and alignment. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody has.
Thank you very much for taking the time, and let me check with committee members to see if anybody has any questions. Anybody have questions at this point? Doesn't appear so, but we really appreciate your taking the time to call in and provide that background. And we'll keep you abreast of the bill as it moves through. But thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
You bet. So at this time, I have one other person signed up to speak, and that's Lori Skillman. Lori and Molly. I think, Representative Witt, maybe you ought to have a service dog when you come up to speak in that day.
Such a pretty dog.
Beautiful dog.
It's kind of adopted her.
I think so.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lori Skillman. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm speaking to you in support of this bill. I've worked with Representative Witt closely on some amendments to the bill. They're slight amendments, but I think that they add some great value. There are three kinds of things. One is to kind of expand the concept instead of just medical services, to expand that concept to health care. So it would take into account mental health. And I think that that's an important consideration for a study or report. The other part is that, as you know, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs doesn't have specific expertise in doing such a kind of a study. So we would ask that it be in the form of a contract. And then the third part of it is that, you know, we really do hope that this will provide some some good data for the legislature to be able to look at. Excuse me, Molly, down. To be able to look at this issue, because the women's, veterans, health care, and mental health care issues and needs are unique. They're different than any other population, and so I'm glad to see some focus and attention on that. And I thank Representative Witt, Representative Evans, and the other sponsors for this bill. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Any
them.
Questions?
Not a question, but just to clarify something in earlier testimony, I just want to point out that I am not a grumpy old man when I'm sitting in there waiting for my doctor to see me. I just wanted to point.
You were one of those I thought of when I heard that comment. Thanks for that clarification. Any questions of Lori? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
For coming. So is there anybody else here who wishes to testify? So, Representative Witt, at this point we have one amendment. Are there going to be others, or?
I'm not aware of any additional.
Okay, thank you. So we'll be able to move it fairly quickly then. Thanks a lot. So hearing no other testimony, I'll close the hearing on House Bill 2539. And I'm going to open a work session for the purpose of discussing House Bill 2108. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Why don't you remind us about what 2108 is before I ask for a motion?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2108 extends the tax credit for physicians serving at the Oregon Veterans Homes until 2022. We have the revenue statement. Further analysis is required. The fiscal statement has also been issued. No fiscal impact. There's a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. The committee met on 210, 212, and today 224 to consider this.
Thank you very much. Representative Boone.
Multitask. Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2108 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 2108 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Is there any discussion? No discussion. Hearing none, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Excused.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
And Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion passes. I don't think we have any others that are ready to move at this particular point. Representative Huffman, your bill is not quite ready yet. The first responders.
The first responder, we have the dash one back. We were hoping to have the dash two back.
Still, okay.
The between the one and the two, everybody is happy and ready to move forward. So we're waiting on the dash two, and then Brian, do you request?
Yeah.
The joint statement on fiscal impact or anything, which there's not supposed to be any, according to our good friend on the back row there that helped us work through that point with OEM. So
as soon as I have it, I'll send it down, and as soon as we get that back,
that statement will
be ready to move.
So it'd be any idea maybe Thursday?
Because there's not much adjustment on the fiscal side, it could be as early as Thursday.
Okay,
great.
We look
Thank
forward
you.
To that. Any other business to come before the committee? Okay. Not, we're adjourned. Thank you all.